Podcast.
Yeah, midweek weed show on a Wednesday coming your way. I'm Jason Wygant with Racer X. The show brought to you by Yoshimura Fly Racing and Yamaha Fly Racing. JT is going to kill me here because this is probably an old jersey. This could be like a 2024 or 2025. I had it hanging up in the back to preview videos from probably over a year ago. Why is this jersey so big? It says it's a large. Also got the Formula helmet here. One of the best in the biz, the Formula helmet. It's got like a, this is pretty cool. It's got a sensor in it, so if you really hit your head hard, you can actually set it up via an app to send information to someone that say, there's an emergency, like if you were out riding in the desert or something like that. It's too technical and sophisticated for me, but for you, I would highly recommend it. It's really been the topic as of late, Justin Barcia and Alpine Stars declaring that he was wearing that Tech Air chest protector that provided 27 Gs worth of protection on that big crash at Anaheim 1. So everybody's trying to elevate on the safety gear side. So shout out Fly Racing for backing this show and putting the Formula Smart Helmet together. And Yoshimura, our sponsor, they're always trying to elevate their game too. Now, if you look behind me, there's an old school Jet Lawrence Honda photo. They've been making the factory Honda exhaust for like 25 years or something crazy like that. But they have exhaust for everything, specifically the Kawasaki KX450. They got a 2.0. So they made huge gains with the original when this newer bike came out for Kawi. Kawi actually improved it. And then Yosh improved on that with the help of National Enduro Champion. And now AMA Rider of the Year, because he's the National Enduro Champ, Stu Baylor. Stu Baylor and his Rocky Mountain Red Bear Kawi team helped develop the exhaust, really designed to make a rideable power, a controllable power, good traction. If you got a Kawasaki, Yoshimura-RD.com, check it out. They have it for the a pipe for the Kawasaki KX250, of course, but the 450 developed by Stu Baylor. And Yamaha on board with the show. Go to YamahaMotorsports.com for their full line, whether you're looking for dirt bikes, more trail bikes versus motocross bikes, cross-country bikes, side-by-sides, ATVs, you name it, they've got you covered. Thanks for the sponsorship. This episode, we're going to have a guest on for the first time. It's a reciprocal podcast guest. Going to bring out Jace from Gypsy Tales, talk about a project he has upcoming with Joe Shimoda. But let's talk everything that went down at San Diego and how it portends to Anaheim 2. Yes, early in the game, it appears that Eli Tomac is in control of the Monster Energy Supercross Championship. He's won two races. An enterprising journalist named me said, hey, was the soil as different in San Diego compared to Anaheim as it looked? He said, yes. That's why I got the journalist award back there. It's actually 2024 award now. Shout out to Mikey Waynes from GNCC who won the 2025 award. But anyway, Eli said, yes, the dirt was a lot different at San Diego. And to me, that's huge because this is a dream run right now. And you're hoping that no one comes along to pinch and wake everybody up and have it end. So when he rode so well on the very dry, slick Anaheim 1, my fear was, oh, maybe we'll get to rutted tracks and we'll find out that the orange pumpkin turned into a pumpkin at midnight. But on a ruddier, tackier track, Eli was just as good. He's also proven that he doesn't have to hole shot to win. He battled past Hunter Lawrence and Ken Roczen. And because other title contenders like Chase Sexton and Cooper Webb have had their problems, it really starts to make the mind wander as to how many wins could Eli get? Can Eli win this title? And he can win a lot more races. And he can win this title. But I don't want to go that far yet. Folks, we cannot take for granted the fact that Eli Tomac should not and probably could not be here right now. When he got hurt at Denver in 2023, I think there were a lot of people, maybe even Eli, leaving the building that day thinking that was perhaps his last race. And then 2024, he did come back, but he wasn't as good as he used to be. So the idea that he was going to ramp back up and get to this level, probably pretty remote. Then he said 2025 would be his last year. Then he gets a ride to KTM. You don't really know how that's going to go. So for about 100 reasons, the idea that Eli Tomac would be 2-0 at the beginning of 2026 didn't probably seem like the most likely scenario. But if you had told someone in Denver when he tore his Achilles in 2023. Don't worry. There will be a time where Eli Tomac's running the red plate, starting his season 2-0, riding as well as ever, and it'll be 3 years from now. Every fan, not just Eli Tomac fans, every fan would have been like, sign me up for that. That's a dream scenario. And it's here right now with Eli winning these races. Now I'm going to go way too deep into this. When I was a kid, I was a fan of Don Mattingly, a baseball player on the New York Yankees. When I was like 8 and 9 years old, he was the best player in baseball. Then he hurt his back. And then every year I was hoping he would get back to those heights, but he was just an above average player for years. And every year I thought it was the year that he was going to get back to being the best. But he never really did, except for about a month and a half in the summer of 1993. And I know that sounds oddly specific, but that's how important it is. Once you actually realize what it would feel like when it's gone and you want it back so badly and you realize it's not going to last forever, you really got to harness that energy, that excitement, the feel goods when you got them. And that's where we are with Eli Tomac right now. The win at San Diego last year was kind of like that, but he wasn't 2-0 at holding the points lead. He wasn't all the other competitors on the back foot like this. This is prime, man. Eli can do it. But worry about winning the title in May in May. Let's just embrace, hey, at the very least, there was a time early in January 2026 where Eli Tomac was once again the best supercross rider on the planet. That alone is awesome. Unless you're one of the guys that needs to challenge Eli for the title. Now, I could run through the point standings here, but why bother? I don't believe the points at the beginning of the year, they practically mean nothing. I think Chase Sexton's 18 down. Cooper Webb is 21 down. That's a big gap if we're down with 4 or 5 races to go. But the short sample size, and also at the beginning of the year, the field is pretty thick usually. So as great as Eli is riding, you know, you could fall in the first turn, get a bad start, whatever, put a seventh on the board, one of those guys wins, and you're like, well, there goes the majority of that point lead. It happens all the time. Did you know that Cooper Webb was down about the same amount of points at this stage in 2024 and quickly made up those points and was pretty close to Jet Lawrence? They were like tied for the points lead late in the season. So it's just the way it goes, man, the short sample size. But it can't go on for much longer. Rounds 3 through 5 are it. If you're Sexton and Webb, you have to claw back. And looking at how well Tomac is A, riding, and B, starting, he hasn't had a bad start yet. Have we seen a bad start? Vancouver, Australia, Anaheim, San Diego, heat races, mains. The dude's been dynamite out of the gate on that machine. So knowing those two things, the pressure is really on those two to step up. We know Ken Roczen's good already. We've now seen that Hunter Lawrence is good already. But those two, they got to get on the horse. And for Webb, look, I know it's very fun for us in the media. We don't want to have the receipts. We don't want to be proven wrong. We all know to never, ever, ever, ever say that Cooper's in a bad spot because that's when he does his best work. But he hasn't shown much in the first two rounds and he's 21 points down. The gap is more because of circumstances. If he doesn't get, his words, taken out by Sexton, and if the red flag doesn't come out while he's leading in Anaheim, this could look a whole lot different. But at no point, really, has Webb been blazing fast on the track. And I know that Webb's trademark isn't blazing fast in general, but I mean, even in Cooper Webb terms, it's been kind of mid, as the kids would say. He did get taken out by Sexton, but that's partially because Sexton got stuck in the gate and was able to catch Webb. Webb was in a battle. He was also on the verge of passing Hunter Lawrence at Anaheim 1. So there's a few silver linings to the dark clouds. But I will tell you this. I saw Justin Cooper and Cooper Webb at the airport Saturday night, San Diego, and I thought they were planning on staying in California all week. Turns out that as soon as the main event ended, the team said, get back to Florida. We got work to do. And they booked flights for them as soon as the race was over. So I can't overhype how important this race is if the team feels that way. As for Sexton, I think I saw what I needed to see. He was way faster, so they lowered the bike. The bike was too low, actually, at Anaheim 1. He's got a lot of pro circuit parts on the bike. He literally tried Levi Kitchen's forks. He got Pro Circuit clamps on the bike, a Pro Circuit linkage, so the bike was a lot taller. Shout out to Lewis Phillips and Steve Mathis for the good post-race interviews with Chase to explain that. The bike looked tiny, tiny at Anaheim 1 on Chase. We were thinking it was the bars. Were they rolled back too much? Was it a weirdo bend? He said, yeah, I looked huge on the bike because the bike was too low. We raised it. He got stuck in the gate, but I don't have any worries about that. Sexton's going to do a couple of things like that throughout the year. The fear would be like, can he ride well in the Cowie? Fast qualifier at Anaheim 1, he could be fast qualifier on anything. He told Mathis he could be fast qualifier driving his truck. To me, he's got to show he could do it in the main event when the track breaks down, and boy, did he ever. So I think Webb's got some work to do. I think Sexton's already there, just needs luck to roll his way. Okay, what else is cracking in the 450 class? Hunter Lawrence is. That was scary, folks. That was scary if you're a Tomac fan, because he was getting really close at the end. Now, Tomac said after the race he fell asleep. He told us in the press conference that he was marking Kenny. Hunter was actually in second. I guess Eli didn't even realize that. He was kind of lazy through some corners on the last lap, just trying to bring it home. And then next thing you know, he sees a red fender. So we're going to find out. And that's what I love about the small sample size. We don't know for sure. Hunter held off Ken Roczen at the beginning of the race. Traditionally, Roczen's unreal at the beginning, and Hunter's not so good at the beginning. Was Hunter holding off Kenny a sign of major improvement from Hunter and fixing a weakness, or was it a byproduct of the track was just too hard to make passes? Larry Brooks, team manager for Roczen, talked to Mathis after the race, and he said he thought it was the track. Kenny couldn't get by and use the speed. He had much more speed than Hunter. He just couldn't use it. So that could be true. Also, is Hunter catching Tomac because Hunter's just that good? Or because Tomac wasn't marking him? I don't know, and that's why they run the races. But there is a chance that Hunter Lawrence is way better than most of us probably realize. Like, enough to win the Supercross title? I mean, why not? He was better than Eli for the majority of Pro Motocross, better than Eli and the rest of these guys besides Jet in the playoffs. I can't rule it out. I can't rule out, and that's why you have to embrace this Tomac thing right now. I can't rule out that the first two rounds we're going to look back on and be like, huh, didn't see X coming. Maybe it's Hunter Lawrence. That was a great ride, and I think he's just going to keep getting better. He was on Pulp MX this week, said the bike still isn't quite where they want it. And also, I just think he doesn't have a lot of experience running at the front in 450 Supercross races. There's really only been one. He battled with his brother 2 years ago, I think it was, in Denver. So he's such a human calculator. I got to imagine he learned a lot seeing the sharp end of the field. Eli and Kenny are so on right now. Also, great precision riding by all three of those guys to be that close, but keep it clean. It was really fun to watch. And I think you've officially got to consider Hunter is as much of a title contender as anyone else. Why not? Now, we could talk 250 class here, but that's actually going to dovetail into the guest that I'm going to have in the show. I was on the Gypsy Tales podcast. Maybe you watched that. Came out this week. That's 4.5 hours there. I'm not going to go nearly that long, but let's check in with my guest, Jace from Gypsy Tales, who's got a pretty cool thing happening this Friday if you're in Anaheim. Check it out. Hey, how about this? We're going to have a guest on the show, and it's a guy who usually has guests on his show. This is Jace McElpine from Gypsy Tales. You're on this show. You're on this show now.
Mate, I'm just doing the rounds. We've got to pay it back, you know, but 4.5 minutes versus 4.5 hours. I don't think it's very fair, but look, here I am.
Dude, it's funny. We did not plan the timing for that to come out like, oh, I'm going to be in the booth the next couple of weeks. It just kind of all dovetailed at the right time.
Yeah, so you're in, what, the next six, you said?
Something like that, through up to Daytona. But that was not why we did it. I just happened to be in California for Anaheim.
No. Yeah, no, it was perfect timing, perfect episode. We also didn't talk about dirt bikes. I don't know how many people kind of picked up on that, but yeah, we had a good time.
I will say this. In the Instagram caption, it says, never rode a dirt bike. I would say I did not growing up. I just want you to know that once I turned 23 and had a full-time job, I've gone over gates, I've raced local motos, even got a few moto wins in the D. Did you know there's a D class? Have you even heard of this?
I did not.
Yeah. Yeah, the rule was you're not allowed to jump any of the jumps. Where I was, the High Point Steel City area, no one had tracks. You just showed up on Sunday and raced. The only way to learn to ride a dirt bike was go out on the track. So they're like, we'll have a class for people who've never jumped the jump before. That was normal.
That's actually what I should race.
I think you're better. Even I'm better than that now. But maybe next year, if I'm on your show, I'll tell you about the aches and pains of learning to jump once I finally did. So I saw you on the floor at San Diego, mate. That was epic. I know that Jet and Eli last year is always going to be like the forever headline because that was like Clash of the Eras. But, dude, this was three guys battling. It was pretty good.
Yeah, San Diego delivered 2 years in a row. I wonder, I was thinking about this the other day. I think that maybe the reason why the racing is always so good there is because the dirt gets ruddy in the rhythm sections and consequentially ruddy to where guys can kind of like really send it through there. Like there's definitely trepidation, but then it doesn't get so ruddy in the turns. It doesn't get so ruddy everywhere else. And I just think that it creates like this perfect level of separation and a level of reward for guys that are able to push it. And second year in a row, just awesome, awesome racing. Like the heats were good, the mains were good. Deegan got booed. Bro, San Diego is becoming the stadium where the fans will let you know. It's like the barometer of Supercross fandom in the sport.
I was surprised, man. You were at Anaheim 1, obviously, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw you over there. Dude, you used to be able to hear Deegan no matter where he was on the track. If he was in first or sixth, you would hear cheers. I don't think it's quite like that right now. I think the Vegas thing has really left a mark, and it's there's still Deegan fans, but it's not quite as overwhelming. They're on the fence right now.
Yeah, yeah, and I think he's just in a bit of a weird spot now where he's not the underdog anymore. There's no, like, proving the haters wrong. Like, if you didn't think Hayden Deegan was going to be great, you were wrong, and that's a fact, you know, so like that whole part of the story's gone. And I think now it's just like expectation and people just hold him to such a high standard of racing. And I mean, the fact that he didn't dominate A1 is like a stain on his resume for the year. Like, so the standards are super high for Danger Boy at the moment. And you're right. I think that the Vegas thing had a hangover for sure, but we saw Jet get booed in San Diego as well. Like, fans are fickle, but I just thought it was crazy. 45 minutes from where he grew up and he's getting booed. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think it's the Vegas thing. It's really carried over. Because, look, not only did he rough up Shimoda, but Shimoda's like, everybody likes Shimoda. Even if he's not your favorite guy, nobody doesn't like Shimoda. So it was like the perfect mixture for Deegan to be aggressive and with the wrong guy. Which leads me to, you got something coming up this weekend on Joe, who's really become one of everyone's favorites.
Yeah, he's your favorite rider's favorite rider, I think it's fair to say. So in the off-season, Joe usually goes home and spends a month at home in Japan. And I basically just hit him up, but I was like, wait, let's do it. Sugo, he got to go to Sugo, which was the last round of the Nationals over there. And I was like, I'll meet you at Sugo, we'll get on the train, we'll go to Suzuki for a few days. So we spent about a week in Japan with Joe, and we got the full dive cultural Japanese experience. And I didn't know Joe was as funny and as wild and as loose as what he is. And I think that, so it's a 100-hour video like we did with Cole, but that was about showing how gnarly Supercross is and the training. And I think this is a bit more just about the, you know, we have so many international riders, there's such an international culture, and I think really trying to tell the story that Supercross and Motocross was built in America, but it was engineered in Japan. And I think that Joe winning the SMX title kind of reminded us all that Japan is where, you know, this sport was built and engineered. So couple cool little things going on, trying to tell a cool story. We're going to have a premiere. The film will probably be about an hour long, and it's in Laguna Beach on Friday night. If anyone's coming to the race and wants something to do Friday night, come and hang.
Oh, Laguna Beach. Yeah, this Friday. So if you're coming in for Anaheim 2, go to the movie theater there in Laguna and watch.
Yep.
You can watch motocross. It's cool.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a beautiful, it's a really beautiful theater. I've been to a couple of premieres there. So yeah, just a cool little thing. And I mean, we were sort of talking about it when we did the show, but there used to be like DMXS parties. There used to be all this cool shit that would happen around a Supercross weekend. doesn't happen as much anymore. So I was just like, this is cool. Joe's cool. It's a very unique story. And I was like, we should just get all our friends together and watch this thing on a big screen. And, yeah, celebrate, like you said, a guy that's becoming one of the favorites in the sport now.
Hey, my last thing. So you spend all this time with the guy. Do you know he's cool with that? Like, can you get annoying or he annoys you, or is there a fear of that? Like, how up in his face are you to get 100 hours in?
Oh, you know when you have a sleepover as a kid and you stay at your friend's house for a few days and by the end of it, you both hate each other and you want to go back. You're like, oh, Mom, I want to come home.
Yeah.
It's not that bad, but definitely I was ready to leave Japan. Joe's driving was just getting to the point where it was very, very fun. We're definitely, yeah, I mean, it's like sun up to sundown. I mean, I think we filmed for like legitimately 16 hours in a row one day.
Dude.
But man, we're like, we started that day, we started eating breakfast at Joe's grandma's house and ended at 1 a.m. at a karaoke bar with Joe's granddad.
Wow, I didn't have that on the bingo card. Jeez.
Yeah. So some big days, but I think it's just cool. Like, it's just cool to really get to see guys out of their element. And there was no dirt bikes. Like, there's some dirt bike footage through the film, but we didn't ride there. Joe didn't ride.
Was he hurt already when this happened?
No, this was before he got hurt.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Why didn't he ride there?
He doesn't ride when he goes back to Japan.
Just there to visit.
Yep. Man, gotcha. He's got like the coolest family, the coolest friends. Like, he just goes into full Japanese tourist mode when he's there. Like, we're in Sendai, we're in Tokyo, we're in Suzuka, we're in Osaka. So like every day, man, he just like, he's got all these people he never really gets to see, and he's just full send in Japan. And we were kind of just like hitched along for the ride for these few days. It was just like, we're going here, we're doing a temple run, we're doing this, we're doing that. I was like, all right, bro, whatever.
Okay, so the premiere is this Friday, and then I'm assuming you'll have it up on your channels eventually or soon.
Yeah, so I think the next Friday after that, the 100 Hours with Joe Shimoda will drop on our YouTube channel. We're going to do like a little behind the scenes from the premiere as well. Trying to like do a bit of a content rollout, you know, make it like a thing. So much effort goes into these projects. They're just like a huge undertaking. So it's kind of cool to just like just milk it, you know.
I know, but I told you, be careful. Only 80%, brother. Don't go too crazy.
I know. Yeah, Griff's trying to prove you wrong. He's been going 100 for the last 2 weeks, and he hit the wall the other night. He's like, I'm not going to listen to Weege. I'm going to prove you wrong.
Made it 2 weeks. Congratulations. Yeah, it's
literally
the type of jobs we're doing. They're never done. You could always try to make it better. Sometimes you just got to say stop. Well,
that's the premiere that we're just like, we're going to work and work and work and work. I'm like, at some point, I just want to get it to where it's done. And then we just keep tinkering and then like export 30 minutes before the show. Cause yeah, it's never done.
Attaboy. All right. Just speaking of that, I'm going to stop right here. We hit 10 minutes. All right. Premiere Friday. If you're in Anaheim, go to Newport. No, not Newport. Laguna.
Laguna Beach. There's tickets on our website. So cool. You've got to register for the event. Gypsy-tails.com. If you go to the shop, you'll see the tickets.
Right. All right. Good work.
Thanks so much,
I'll see you there Friday, depending on my schedule. Either way, I'll watch when it comes out. I don't plan Friday. That's Friday's plan. I'm not planning Friday on Tuesday, brother. You know that.
We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah.
I'll see you there. I got a feeling.
I usually don't say no to things. All right. Cheers, mate.
See you, mate. Thank you.
Perfect. See ya. Yeah, good to get a guest on this show. We're going to try to do that to mix it up. Otherwise, you'll realize what this is, which is just some random guy in his house talking about racing. How good could it really be? We're going to get some guests. I got some ideas. Everybody has guests. Everybody has pods. I hate asking riders to do even more than they actually do. But we're going to do it for you. Because we were talking to Jace about Shimoda at Deegs, we do need to talk 250 class. First of all, I know you want to talk about the Deegan takeout, non-takeout. Like I say with all this block pass stuff, you already have your opinion. You probably want me to have your opinion. You have your opinion. Nothing I'm going to say is going to change the way you think about it. But I do feel like Hayden reestablish that he's the boss of the 250 class. Yes, he knocked Anstey down, but he also ran Anstey down first to get there in both the heat and the main. Anstey at that point was kind of letting him by, I think, thinking like, you got it, mate. So I think that's a huge sign. Haven't seen him race Kitchen handlebar to handlebar yet, but I think Deegan is taking control kind of in the way you'd expect. I mean, look, he's a dynamo. He's a phenom. He's been winning races his whole life. Max Anstey is very good. It's unbelievable how good he's become in Supercross. If there's gnarly whoops, he might be able to make up for every other part of the track where Deegan's good. Anstey's so good in whoops. But still, to say you got to go out and beat that guy is a very tall order. You know, Jet Lawrence lost the Supercross title to Colt Nichols a couple years ago. But then the next year, Jet was so much better. RJ Hampshire was very good. But he wasn't going to beat Jet. It's kind of the way it rolls sometimes in the 250 class. I do want to shout out the two emotional leaders of the paddock that ended up second and third. It's been a real cathartic season of 250 podiums. You had Ryder D finally getting his first career podium and all the emotions that came with that at Anaheim 1. You had Hymus overcoming his third knee surgery, saying he thought his career was over, and then getting a podium at Anaheim 1. And then that's somehow topped by the two guys who are perhaps the most articulate, the most, I understand my lot in life and what it's like to be a professional racer, riders that you'll ever talk to, which is Michael Moseman and Cameron McAdoo. It's just such a juxtaposition. I was laughing. There's Deegan on the podium saying he didn't mean to knock Anstey down, getting booed. And then 30 seconds later, there is McAdoo, like an old school presidential campaign speech about his wife, about his baby, about how much this means to him, and about his sister who's serving in the military overseas to keep us free. That's what he said. I think that's what makes the 250 class cool. And I know that some people think the class is broken when you have 29-year-old McAdoo and Moseman, who's been around the block a time or two, and Anstey's now the oldest winner in the history of the class against guys like Deegan. But it usually works out, man. The superstar young phenoms end up winning races and titles in that class. Anyway, it's just the mashup. You never create a perfect rule to make it work. I just like all those personalities being in there. Anyway, McAdoo, I saw him going through security in the morning, and I said, man, how was the riding in Anaheim 1? He's like, good. And I'm like, but you were with the lead pack and you lost him. He actually crashed, I think, in the triple after they went under the tunnel at Anaheim 1, then had the crash with Deegan after that. He told me, if those two things don't happen, I think I get second, which, honestly, he told me this, and I just was poker-facing it, but I didn't believe him. I didn't think he'd get second at Anaheim 1. Those guys were going fast. Anstey, Hymus, Ryder D. Well, he beat those guys at San Diego. Only because Anstey fell, but Hymus couldn't get him. Ryder D didn't have a good start. Prove me wrong again. McAdoo is so fun to watch because he's all heart, all grit. He's trying so hard, and those guys had shots, and they couldn't get him, and he ends up second. This is just what McAdoo does. So Deegan's in control. You guys are going to discuss Deegan and the pass or takeout. But I like the dynamic of that class. The one thing that has to happen, though, is Kitchen's got to race Deegs. Kitchen's got to race Deegs. He's got to get going. He might be the one guy in Supercross who has the speed, technique, all that. Deegan did run Anstey down. Could he have done that to Kitchen? That's why they were in the races. Okay, thanks to the sponsors of this show. That's Yoshimura, Yamaha, and Fly Racing. Thanks to the guest, Jace from Gypsy Tales. Check out his show on Friday. Go to racerxonline.com for all the latest news. We got the injury report and race preview coming up on this channel on Thursday. Mitch Oldenburg, by the way, arm surgery. Texted him this morning. Fairly simple injury. We'll be back eventually. Beta says by Friday they might have more info. I think they're going to need to look for a fill-in rider, but they weren't ready to say that yet. They've lost both their riders. Hopefully Malcolm Stewart continues to improve. Justin Barsha said he will be back. He just doesn't know when yet. All the latest news on this channel, on the website, on our social media. Thanks for watching.